yourself and your affiliation, and if you want to direct your question, take the panelists to the matter.
Thank you. Nemat Najumi, consultant. I had the opportunity in the last 8 months to visit Afghanistan numerous times, and luckily had the opportunity also to go beyond Kabul into many different provinces. My question comes to the point that, which I drew from my conversation with many local people in many different provinces, when I asked to name me three most important things on the ground. The first thing came security and security and security. And it seems that in many times that I visited Afghanistan and revisited in the last 8 months, the security situation is still uncertain in many different parts. Mostly the central government, and especially dominated in Kabul, is not really has the capability of enforcement many initiatives and objectives around the country. And according to my conversation to many, many local and national actors in Afghanistan, they all are concerned about their lack of resources and this ability to maintain what they have promised in the Bonn Agreement and the Loya Jirga. Came to the point, my question is this, that we are facing a dilemma of security in Afghanistan. In one hand, you have ISAF forces located in Kabul, and they cover only that part. And in most part of the country is living under the uncertain insecurity condition. So the lack of a strategy from the government Karzai, as well as from the United States and in the national community dealing with the importance of security in Afghanistan is very obvious. There is no strategy to move the ISAF forces beyond its limit now, beyond Kabul. In the meantime, there is no national army. And I do believe we have to make our mind to move in either direction, to help the, Mr. Karzai with building a new army, which takes times, or expand the ISAF forces beyond the current situation. Thank you.
I agree with much of what you said about the definition of the problem. Let me see if I can help with regard to the strategy. The long-term strategy is obviously to build the national army and the police and the legal system for Afghans to provide for their own security. That is the long-term strategy. The question really is, what do you do in the transition until that happens? I did mention that we're looking at ways to expedite the building of Afghan security capability, but the central issue is what do you do in the transition? And since there are different security problems right now and during this transition, our thinking was to provide different answers for those different problems. For Kabul, with ISAF and the environment. For the areas where the Taliban Al-Qaeda was a coalition. For the rest, with regard to the big problem, which is potential conflict among warlords, which is you don't want Afghanistan to go back to civil war, was to use the American influence. And we do have, continue to have influence with people there to discourage them from going to war, to encourage them to cooperate with the government and so on. Now, it may be that, and we're open-minded, we're focused on the objective, so to speak, and getting to success, to sort of make adjustments, and as we did with regard to for the security of people, such as President Karzai, to assist, because it was regarded to be needed. And we're open-minded about additional steps during the transition, but we certainly think that the goal, the overriding kind of approach, the dominant approach has to be not to make Afghans for kind of long-term dependent on security on others, but to build their own institutions. Let me say one thing on ISAF expansion, and I'm not going to reveal our dirty laundry of sort of our own deliberations and discussions. But in Kabul there is ISAF, but that's also not panacea in terms of security. We just discussed today's incident, and there have been a bunch of others incidents that the vice president was killed. Minister of Evasion was killed in Kabul, and there are security problems in Kabul. And we're trying to look at what else might be needed in Kabul itself. So without getting into an argument on ISAF being the answer everywhere, but we're not theologically opposed, if you like, to ISAF. It's also an issue for us because we're not in ISAF on the ground. We provide assistance and help. And it's easy for us, to some extent, to say, well, sure, we should have ISAF expanded to Mazar-e-Sharif, Jalalabad, X, Y, and Z. But you, Germans, Turks, and whomever, you go and do this. That might satisfy some people, but if we posture, that's a call on others to send people, but we have not done that so far. But we're looking at the issue. I would not rule it out that it could play a role beyond Kabul.
Please, we have a limited amount of time, sure, so short questions,
yes,
would be
helpful. And short answers.
My question is primarily directed at Barney, but I'm interested in what the other panelists think. You started to address the issue of ethnic problems and conflict and cleavages, and I wanted to press you a little bit more on it. I was thinking specifically the problem of revanchismo. You've got at least allegations of Hazara and Tajik counter attacks against the Pashtun in the Mazar-e-Sharif area, and then of course it seems like some of the warlords are able to utilize the Americans against their enemies by saying, oh, he's Al-Qaeda, and so I think in some instances the Americans end up aerial bombarding both. So I wanted to ask you how you would generally overcome the problem of ethnic fragmentation and cleavages, whether you thought civil society was the answers along the lines of what Varshini is arguing, or some sort of other nondescriptive association, mixing of military units, or maybe even a proportional representation system.
Well, I think there are a number of problems that are lumped together as ethnic problems in Afghanistan, and it's neither true, as a lot of people who I would say are relatively new to the scene say, that all these conflicts are ethnic, nor is it true, as many Afghans say, is that ethnicity has nothing to do with it. It's true that the conflicts in Mazar-e-Sharif are among militias that are ethnically recruited, but if you go talk to people in Mazar-e-Sharif, you won't find that the Tajiks support Atta, the Uzbeks support Dostum, and that the Pashtuns support Jumah Khan Hamdard. You'll find that they all hate all of them. And wish that they would go away. And that may be graduated to some extent. You know, they may feel a little bit safer being robbed and pillaged by a member of their own group than by someone else. But and they may benefit from that robbing and pillaging. But ethnicity is the way that people are is a method of communication that helps recruit people into those militias. But they are not representative. And in fact, one of the problems that Afghanistan is going to face is that ethnic representation and decentralization is associated in Afghanistan with warlord rule. And therefore, people who want the rule of law say they want a strong central government. Now, it is very likely, in fact, that some other arrangement than a strong central government would be better than Afghanistan, given that it's never had an effective strong central government and is unlikely to have one in the near future. But at the same time, they have even less experience of a rule of law by local authorities. I would say that actually what goes under the name of ethnic problems in Afghanistan today is primarily the security problem, because the main ethnic actors are these armed militias who sometimes use ethnicity in choosing their targets. And that solving the security problem and building more national security forces under an international security umbrella will go a long way to resolving the ethnic conflicts that exist today.
Have to cut this off. Just two more quick questions, please.
Gary Thomas from Voice of America. I've made several trips to Afghanistan since 9/11. Two very quick questions. First of all, does it seem to you that the United States is pursuing two inherently contradictory tracks, in that on the one hand it needs to curb the power of the warlords to build up the central government, on the other hand it needs those warlords in order to bolster the anti-terrorism effort? Second quick question, what, in your view, would an attack on Iraq do in U.S. terms of U.S. support, support for the United States in Afghanistan?
Well, with regard to the first question, I think of necessity, since the national institutions, the national army, did not exist in Afghanistan when we got there, we had to work with forces that were there, or forces that we could assist in assisting us to go after Al-Qaeda and Taliban. I mean, you couldn't, we didn't have the choice of saying, do we work with the National Army or do we work with the region leaders? There was no National Army. And the objective of fighting Taliban and Al-Qaeda was a paramount objective for us, and it remains a central objective in Afghanistan. So, however, given our desire, as I described, that we want to see Afghanistan, its new order consolidated, we recognize that the answer is national institutions, as Bonnie said, that you need to have a national army that's representative, that has the confidence of the Afghans. And I think I agree with Bonnie again that the Afghan people generally, to the extent that that one can talk about them, favor a national institution over regional leaders. I agree with that. But the question is, how do you transition, given in the face of this longer-term objective of Afghanistan's national institution, the near-term necessity and the fact of what the situation is? You have to, you know, your policy has to deal with reality, and the reality is we've had to work with people who could help on this. But as the problem of counter-terror declines, or as the national institution are erected or built that can assist in this, a shift, incremental shift, evolutionary shift, would by necessity would take place and is part of our thinking. With regard to the second objective, of course, second question, of course, the President hasn't made a decision on this issue, but my own judgment is, I hope it's not regarded to be a flip answer, that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We would, if the President does decide to do what he decides to do in Iraq, we will continue to pursue these objectives. We're committed to it. We're determined by it. We think it's of great importance that this new order consolidates in Afghanistan. So that objective will remain.
Last mini question, and I hope a mini answer. So please.
Rich Byrne, New York Press in Boston, Phoenix. Before 9/11, nation building was an object of disdain. Now, obviously, those skills are at a premium. Can you put your finger on one area in Afghanistan in which U.S. nation-building capacity needs reinforcement?
Well, I think that during the campaigns, you know, some of these issues were debated and discussed. Afghanistan is an important objective. The threat from there was a vital threat, or the threat to the vital interests of the United States, to our home homeland, to the territory, and we are committed to consolidating this this order, whatever you call that. I'm not going to kind of nitpick the terms. We are committed to consolidating this new order there, and helping the Afghans. You said which areas would I describe as requiring greater effort, greater attention, reinforcing. I thought I was relatively broad that we needed to, with regard to security, we need to expedite and better coordinate effort, building institutions of the military, the police. It's a multinational effort. We need to expedite that, and we will. And with regard to the economy, I think I regard these things, the economy, politics, and security, to kind of reinforce each other. Success in one area will have positive effects on the other kind of lanes. Failure in one of the other lanes would have implications on the other. They tend to interconnect. So, and I think I tend to be optimistic on the political track, as I said before, given that we make progress on those two other tracks.
A quick comment from Michael and then Barney.
Thank you, Rich. Let me address that very specifically. I think the United States needs to be involved in nation building in Afghanistan. I think there's two specific areas where they can help the UN and other partners do a better job, and it's fundamental. First is in training and deploying and monitoring the security forces. That's the Army and the police. That's all talked about. The U.S. Army is training the battalions there. But the Army and the police forces have to be trained, vetted, monitored, and made functional institutions. That's nation building, and it's going to require a lot of actors that are involved in that. Secondly, in demobilizing, it goes back to the issue of warlords, in demobilizing militia groups and marginalizing over time the warlordism in Afghanistan. That will not happen overnight, nor would I suggest you try to eliminate it overnight, because you will cause probably more problems than you solve by trying to get rid of it overnight. These are issues that we in the United Nations deal with in virtually all of our peacekeeping operations. Training and building security institutions, demobilizing the militias, and marginalizing the combatants of previous civil wars and trying to build a society. The U.S. has to be involved in this, or it will not work. But the U.N., with the U.S. and other partners together, we can do it.
Barney, you get the last one.
Finally, there's something often that people often neglect, which is the monetary and fiscal side of this, which is the government has to start becoming self-sustaining. That's connected to warlords, because the warlords are living off the customs revenues which they are now taking. We need a much stronger capacity to do that. And finally, as well as drugs, as Mike says. And finally, this case has illustrated something that has been shown to be true in every other case, which is a flaw not with the United States or the UN, but with the entire international architecture, which is there's not a single institution which is capable of acting with anywhere near adequate speed in order to provide immediate recovery assistance after the signing of an agreement like the Bonn Accord. So that here we are almost a year later, and major infrastructural repair has not even begun. And that because the humanitarian organizations can't do it and the development organizations can't do it. There's something else that needs to be created and put in place to undertake this specific function.
Well, thanks a lot to our panel. Excellent discussion. And, Paul, we too could go on all day. Thanks for really appreciate your time. Yeah.